You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
And I'm Katie Frankowitz. A former Iwako fire chief who is facing 51 charges in connection to alleged sex crimes against at least three children pleaded guilty in a sudden plea agreement Wednesday. Jeffrey Archer pleaded guilty to two counts of first-degree rape of a child, third-degree rape of a child, and distributing a controlled substance to a minor. All other charges were dismissed as part of the plea agreement. The Pacific County Prosecutor's Office is recommending Archer be sentenced to more than 19 years in prison. He'll also have to register as a lifetime sex offender. Archer is scheduled to be formally sentenced on September 8th. He was arrested in January on numerous sex abuse charges. The city of Iwako terminated his employment soon after. An interim fire chief is overseeing the fire department, and recruitment is ongoing for a permanent replacement. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com.
Two seats on the Warrenton City Commission, the mayor, and Position 4 will be on the November 3rd ballot. Paul Mitchell, the current Position 4 commissioner, has filed for re-election. Mayor Henry Balensiefer has not yet filed. He has until August 18th to do so. Any other contenders have until 5 p.m. on August 25th to file their candidacy papers with the city recorder. The Warrenton City Commission approved revisions to the city's election filing rules at a meeting held Tuesday. The new rules have to do with how a mayoral or commission candidate is nominated. These will not go into effect until after the November election. Warrenton has raised the candidate filing fee from $25 to $50 to cover the hours it takes the city recorder to process and verify the signatures candidates must collect. That change is expected to be finalized at an August 11th meeting. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Columbia Press. There are multiple wildfires burning on the Colville Reservation in eastern Washington, displacing people and destroying homes. One of these fires, the Kaiser Canyon Fire, is the largest one in Washington right now. NWPB's Lauren Gallup reports.
When the Kaiser Canyon Fire jumped into the town of Nespelem, it was coming right towards Corby Turner's neighborhood.
I get outside to assess it, and immediately there's explosions, there's cars blowing up, the fire's ripping.
Turner says he could see the fire going from house to house.
And it caught up in the drainage below our houses and started coming towards our homes.
Turner, who used to be a firefighter, and other guys started getting hoses out and spraying things down. His friend came through with a bulldozer, digging into the ground to create a fire break. You can hear that here.
We corralled it and held it along the line all the way up till the west side of town, and we got it extinguished to the point where we could hold it.
The group held the fire for about 20 minutes before aerial support and fire engines started attacking it. Turner shared this audio as helicopters started to drop in. These guys have been out for weeks using their landscaping equipment, garden hoses, and anything else they have on hand. They're trying to keep the fire from destroying this town where about 150 people live. If he and the other guys weren't out there,
I really feel like we would have lost 10 to 15 more homes, at least 10 to 15 more.
In the past few weeks, fires have destroyed at least 30 homes across the reservation. Turner's family members lost two homes, one that had been theirs for nearly five decades.
The average home has 8 to 10 individuals living there. So with that being said, anybody that loses a house, it displaces anywhere from 8 to 10 to even 15 people at times.
The Kaiser Canyon and Madrite fires both started in mid-July. Dry, windy conditions have fueled their spread. Smaller spot fires have jumped lines. Community members are getting resources to people who need them.
Our crew goes in and drops off food, water, batteries, gas for generators. Pretty much anything that our community needs, we deliver.
Faith Zachary is part of the River Warriors Society. She and others wanted to try to get things to people in emergencies. They've been doing this every summer for over a decade. It's usually just Zachary and a handful of others. Every day, they get $500 in gas to guys like Corby Turner that are volunteering their time and equipment to fight fire.
We're able to get in there and respond to emergency services in real time.
Zachary drives between 400 and 500 miles a day around the reservation. When the Madrite fire moved into the town of Inchelem, the River Warriors Society paid to get gas in over 70 families' cars so they could evacuate.
This fire is a little bit different because it's hitting all four of our districts. It's hit Nispelum, it's hit Omak, it's hit Keller, it's hit Inchelem. So our whole entire res is on fire right now.
It's hit Zachary too. She has people camping out in her yard. There's a fire line dug up around her house. For now, she thinks they're safer than in other areas. I'm Lauren Gallup reporting.
In Spokane, 60,000 people have been evacuated, fleeing several fires. But they're not the only ones. Animals, too, have had to leave their homes. NWPB's senior correspondent Anna King is in Spokane and has this story.
Bubbles is upset. He's a handsome, tall, black-brown horse. He's got a white star and a snip on his nose. Horses often talk to each other when they're upset or confused. Bubbles has been a bit off his feed in water. He's not used to being stalled. Here at the Spokane Fair and Expo Center, dozens of horses, a donkey, and even an emu are taking reprieve from the fire. They've been evacuated here by their families, friends, and neighbors.
I definitely knew that Bubbles would get on a trailer, no problem. He's a good boy.
That's Lou Hill. She's 46. She lives in West Spokane, works for a nonprofit in town, and Hill boards Bubbles and her other horse up north, right where several fires came. She said she had to trust that the ranch owners would get her horses trailered out. In emergencies, people write phone numbers on horses' coats.
He was scared, though, and I think any time that you see phone numbers written on your horse, it sends a new sense of fear. It definitely makes you want to lean into the I'd rather be safe than sorry. The idea of letting my horse go and then hoping that I find them again is probably the most devastating feeling you can imagine.
She says she has a close relationship with her horses.
You can feel that they're scared too, and they know something's coming, and so they have just as much urgency to be safe.
The people here are stressed too. Many were helping to clean stalls. 12-year-old Justin sweeps up an empty stall. He has a toothy grin and a curly blonde mop. He sports a blue t-shirt with a massive baseball emblazoned on it. His grandmother and grandfather's home burned up in the old trails fire.
By the time they got the level 3 evacuation, ashes were falling on their car, so luckily they got both their cars and everything important, and they got out safely.
And his own family had to evacuate the Fairview fire. He managed to save his baseball, football, and basketball cards.
Yeah, it was pretty scary.
What do you remember about all that when, like, you had to leave? What did your mama say?
She just said, pack whatever you could, what's important to you, stuff that can't be replaced. And so I just grabbed everything that was important. And within 15 minutes, a police showed up and said, you gotta go. So we left.
Justin is sad and a bit stressed. Pretty much everyone around him is.
Pretty tough.
Yeah. In the moment it was scary, but we were lucky to everybody got out alive.
He says most everyone is gonna recoup their lives eventually. In Spokane, Washington, I'm Anna King.
The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality expects intermittent wildfire smoke along the coast to continue, including in Clatsop County as multiple wildfires burn in Oregon and Washington state. Air quality on Oregon's north coast hovered between good and moderate, Wednesday night into Thursday morning. Smoke levels can change rapidly depending on fire activity, weather patterns, and wind direction. Clatsop County officials recommend that residents monitor local air quality and take precautions when smoke levels increase. This means staying indoors when possible and keeping windows and doors closed, limiting time outdoors, and avoiding strenuous activity out of doors. If possible, use air filters or a portable air purifier to improve indoor air quality. Information about current air quality conditions is available at oregonsmoke.org, at aqi.oregon.gov, and on the free Oregon Air smartphone app. You're listening to KMUN. This is local and regional news on KMUN.
Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife researchers headed out to sea on Saturday in search of an answer to a decades-old mystery. KLCC's Brianna Bowman has more.
Since the early 90s, fishery scientists on the West Coast have noticed a peculiar trend in black, yellowtail, and canary rockfish populations. The older females get, the fewer of them there are. Leif Rasmussen, Marine Fisheries Research Project Leader for ODFW, thinks one possibility is that older females are migrating to offshore seamounts, though he admits the theory raises plenty of questions.
Why would that have evolved for them to just go, like, swim out there and hang out? But evolution's unique and weird, and more bizarre things have happened in the world.
Rasmussen and his team are now at Cobb Seamount, about 300 miles west of the Washington coast, on OSU's research vessel, the Pacific Storm. The crew will spend about 11 days conducting research into this question. Rasmussen says even if the team doesn't solve the mystery on this trip, the expedition will provide another important piece of the puzzle. I'm Brianna Bowman, reporting.
The power of a powwow has been described as a collective heartbreak that draws people together. Celebrants often say they feel unity and freedom as they dance in a circle. Those elements are especially vital for those serving time at the Oregon State Correctional Institution in Salem, where life is spent behind barbed wire and fortified walls. But as KLCC's Brian Bull reports, for one day each year, inmates get to wear native apparel and move to the rhythm of a rawhide drum with friends and loved ones. Warning, this story contains mentions of violent crime, suicide, and terminal illness.
A soft morning breeze blows, rustling the frills on Anthony Salazar's regalia. He describes its colors as his wife Stephanie helps with final adjustments.
Colors of white, black, red, and yellow, which is the colors of the four directions. The green represents Mother Earth. All the regalia is connected to nature somehow.
Nearby, visitors pass a man swirling a burning stick of sage on their way to chairs lining a field. Drummers gather in a circle while other dancers fix their bangles and beadwork. A man with a microphone greets the crowd with a smile.
We're so glad that you guys were able to make it. We are about to prepare to do our grand entry.
At first, you'd think this was just any other powwow getting underway. However,
I'm in here for two counts of murder, and I got life sentence. I've been in 24 years.
Salazar, like everyone else preparing to dance or drum, is a lifer at this medium security all-men's prison. An Apache Indian from San Bernardino, he's thrilled to be part of the powwow, and that his wife is present.
This is actually the first powwow where I've actually dressed up in regalia and I'm going to dance.
This is my first one that I've been able to come to. Very fortunate to be here. It means a lot.
All dancers circle the field for the grand entry, while a lone red-tailed hawk soars high above. It's a simple but powerful symbol of freedom in a place where guard towers and checkpoints remind everyone this is a prison. Nestor Diaz Miller, with the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua, says participants practice for the Many Nations powwow all year. He says when he first came here, he knew nothing of his native heritage. Serving 25 years to life, he says the powwow and the prison sweat lodge saved him.
I've dealt with suicidal thoughts and actions in my past, and being able to focus on this neepy, on this sweat lodge, and that drum literally saved my life. It's given me something to believe in, something to hope in. It's such a special feeling. I can't describe it other than special.
No one present recalled just when the first powwow happened here at OSCI, but Charlie Cludacci of Mescalero and Salagi descent says it's been at least 30 years, back when he was first sentenced here. In that time, he's reflected much on the event's restorative and rehabilitative powers.
When people connect with their culture, the things that are already in their blood and their DNA, it helps perspective. So when we change the way we think, we change the way we behave. And a lot of us are here, you know, because of the way we behave. So the idea is if we get well here, we're well when we go home.
There are other events, including a visiting tribal elder who tells Native stories with hand puppets.
They had power. They could say, I want the tent to become a rock, and poof, became a rock, but they got in trouble.
A feast with fry bread and elk meat, and even a powwow version of musical chairs. MC Sean Jeffers Monroe, who is part of the Many Nations Club and an organizer, says it's a great experience to have his wife and other loved ones here once a year.
My mother was dying of cancer 3 years ago, and I was able to have this ceremony with her and these last rites and be able to say goodbye to her. So this is that one time a year that we get to be together as a community, as a family, and kind of be free in a way.
About 80 guests were in the visitors section. Like all visitors to an Oregon prison, each one has to go through a background check, clear security, and agree to certain rules and prohibitions, including no smartphones or garb that matches those of the inmates.
It's just a perfect and beautiful day for a powwow. Sure is.
One of the guests for this powwow is Aliza Kaplan, a professor at Lewis and Clark Law School in Portland. She says she and some of her students have been invited to this event about 5 times. She runs a law clinic, teaches classes in prisons, and works on legislative issues that affect many in the corrections system.
Because we aim to really get to know our clients and what matters to them and see them as more than people who have committed crimes.
No one here glosses over the fact that they're behind bars for serious crimes and may not ever step foot beyond the prison gates. But many embrace the powwow as a way to hold on to tradition, bond, and find worth. Again, Charlie Cludacci.
People were starting to realize that they have value as human beings. They're not the sum total of an event. They're the sum total of all their lives and everyone they're connected to.
I'm Brian Bull, reporting at the Oregon State Correctional Institution in Salem.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. That includes news host and production assistant Ava Berardi and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. For more local and regional news and to access the daily podcast versions of the news broadcast, go to kmun.org/news. If you have a news tip or story idea, you can email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Up next, American Democracy Minute. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A ballot measure by the GOP majority legislature to raise the bar for passing citizen ballot initiatives was overwhelmingly defeated in Missouri's state primary August 4th. The same day, a ballot measure for November's ballot, repealing the state's partisan and racially gerrymandered congressional maps, was proclaimed unconstitutional by the Missouri Secretary of State. Missouri ballot measures require a simple 50% plus one majority statewide to pass, which activists recently used to enshrine abortion rights in the state constitution, bypassing the legislature. Amendment 4 would have required a simple majority, but in each of the state's congressional districts, functionally ending citizen ballot initiatives as a tool. Missouri voters weren't having it. The measure was defeated with an overwhelming and bipartisan 80.3% of the vote. We reported in May that Missouri Secretary of State Denny Hoskins was stonewalling approval of a proposed November citizen ballot initiative repealing the legislature's partisan and racially gerrymandered congressional maps. The Missouri Independent reports that just hours before the polls closed August 4th, Hoskins pronounced the measure unconstitutional, saying citizen initiatives could not be used for redistricting. The group behind the initiative, People Not Politicians, filed an immediate court challenge. We've linked to the local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beale.